On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
There's been an awful lot this week around COVID-19 and the development of a vaccine, something which finally maybe gives us a sense that there is some light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to all of this. But how prepared are we to roll it out, particularly given some of the logistical challenges that there'll be when all the talk of the Pfizer vaccine is that it needs to be stored at minus 80 degrees centigrade in order to be kept fit for human distribution? Well, just before we came on air this morning, I spoke to the interim director of the HPSC. His name is Dr. John Cudahy. The HPSC is the body which has been compiling every day's COVID-19 stats. So it's obviously been a fairly busy year for that agency. And I started by asking him just how exactly the agency has coped with the extra workload it's faced in 2020.
Well, it's been a very busy time, as you said, yes. But in the HPSC, I suppose we work with the 8 public health departments around the country and with the other agencies. The teams in the HPSC have been primarily focused on COVID-19 over the past year. But of course, we have to keep an eye on the other communicable diseases as well. So we have a business continuity team in there as well. But I'm happy to say there's a very good team between public health departments, the HPSC and the other agencies in the HSC and Department of Health.
Yeah, and we're obviously very thankful for that and all their work as well, because if we don't really have an understanding about how the virus is progressing, then there's very little we can do. So we appreciate all the efforts that you and everyone else is doing there. As regards to the statistics themselves, obviously they've been going down, thankfully, at a fairly healthy rate for the last couple of weeks. We've seen a little bit of an uptick again in the last couple of days. Is there any insight into whether that minor uptick in the last couple of days might be sustained, or is it still a bit too early to say?
Well, I suppose it's usual that we would see a variation in the day-to-day case rates, but for the 5-day moving average is now 355 cases per day. If we look at the 14-day cumulative incidence, that's 129 per 100,000 population, and that's more than halved from where it was 2 weeks ago. But that said, there one-third of our cases are in Dublin. As you will have seen, the incidence rate in Donegal is also higher than in other areas. It's running at 270 per 100,000 now, as I mentioned, compared to a national rate of 129. In Limerick, it's 196. So it's not a uniform picture across the country. But as you mentioned, the overall trends are good. In some areas, it's taking longer for those incidence rates to come down than in others.
There seems to be a broad belief that although thankfully the rates are coming down, that maybe they've been coming down now at such a steady rate for the last 3 or 3.5 weeks, that it's not really easy or fair to say that they're coming down as a result of level 5, that certainly the limit on where people can gather and everything will obviously have played its part, but that it was actually the impact of the level 3 measures that had been introduced a little bit before that, which have actually really the ones that triggered this latest fall in COVID-19. Is that fair to say?
I think that the primary reason that levels decrease is where people are adhering to the public health measures and the regulations in the government framework. And we're so familiar with those behaviours now that prevent transmission, like the hand hygiene, the wearing of masks, physical distancing and avoiding crowds and so on. And that's what makes a difference to the case numbers. In terms of level 3, level 5, I think those type of measures in level 3 contributed to an initial reduction in case numbers, but they didn't bring them down sufficiently. And I suppose safe to say that in many areas they reached a steady state, but we needed to bring those numbers down further. And I think level 5 measures were necessary in order to attempt to do that. And as we know, from previous years, we often see a surge in demand for hospital services in around Christmas into January and February. And I think the modelling team, looking at the projected numbers, it was very clear that level 5 measures were a necessity.
So the level 5 was basically the bit that has caused it to decelerate at the rate that it has. That probably seems fair. We have asked you to talk to us this lunchtime about the developments we've had this week regarding particularly the COVID-19 vaccine, the candidate that's being promoted by Pfizer, which seems to be taking off. And I'll come to that in just 1 minute. But again, just with your HPSC hat on, are there any notable trends in the demographics of the cases in the last few weeks as regards maybe the age cohorts or anything like that? Is there anything that has been, it has changed profile in the last couple of weeks, or is it just a case that across all ages in society that it's beginning to come down at equal rates?
Well, up to 3 weeks ago, we saw a significant peak in the incidence in the 19 to 25 year age group. And that has now come down to be more similar to other age groups. But in those same recent 3 weeks, we are seeing an increase in the number of cases in the over 65 age group. And that's a particular concern because this is the particularly vulnerable group, along with people who have medical conditions. So we know that the rate in these older age groups is related to the overall activity of the disease in the community.
Sure.
So if we can keep the disease activity low in the community, then we can also protect the vulnerable groups, which are the elderly and the people with medical conditions.
Has there been any major change in the number of cases that you've seen among those of school-going age? Because many would wonder whether the one-week closure of schools has helped to take the wind out of the sails of the virus overall.
Well, since the schools returned after the summer, the rate, the incidence rate in schools has actually been very low, and the positivity, that's the number of positive tests out of the number tested, has also been low. And what we also noticed that even where we do see cases in a school, for the most part, it hasn't been that there's been transmission in the school.
Sure.
It's been that these cases occurred in the community and the either the staff or the pupils happen to be going to school.
But as regards the closure of schools, at least for the one scheduled midterm week, has there been any notable change in the number of younger people who have then been confirmed as positive either, or has it made any difference at all?
Well, with the small numbers that we're dealing with, we haven't seen any significant change.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. Let's talk then about the vaccine itself, particularly the Pfizer candidate, which we've heard so much about this week as we're talking about. There's been some suggestion that this would be a huge logistical undertaking. I think they say that for most of its shelf life, the vaccine has to be stored at temperatures of minus 80 degrees. It would obviously be a very, very big undertaking to try and get this distributed, even if there were, in fact, doses for everyone. What sort of work is already underway to try and make that a reality if this vaccine is safe for distribution?
Well, I suppose it was positive news, absolutely, when the Pfizer announcement was made. Just to say that the full data hasn't been published yet or peer-reviewed, and then the next step is that it would be assessed by the regulators. But from what we know from the press release, they have said that two doses would be required. As you mentioned, it would be stored at under 80 degrees. So that has some logistical challenges. Now, in the HSE, we're familiar with the cold chain system for vaccines such as flu, but in this particular one, it's much lower temperatures. So it entails coolers fed with dry ice, and then the vaccine can be stored in a fridge for 5 days before administering. So while there are challenges in that, I think they're not unsurmountable. And plans are already in place. As you said, there's a government task force chaired by Professor Brian McCrae, which has already met. And there's also an EU steering board for the procurement of the vaccines, and the Department of Health and HSE are represented on that. At the level of the Department of Health, then, there's a COVID immunization steering group, which is convened based on the recommendation from NEFIS, and that's developing national policy in relation to the COVID vaccines. A COVID-19 immunization program implementation team has been established in the HSE. So this is, I suppose, the on-the-ground planning group that will look at the procurement, the IT, quality assurance, risk management, training and education, and logistics around clinics and staff, and then monitoring and evaluation. So it's really that group has already met a couple of times, as have the subgroups, and they're getting down to the detail of the implementation of the rollout of this vaccine.
Speaking of the implementation of the rollout, and again, assuming that this candidate does do exactly as we hope it does, and if it is as successful as Pfizer claimed it to be, and if we're able to roll it out at that speed, do we know then, because of the extra complications around how it will be administered, and because particularly it will need to be done in two doses, do we know if it's going to be GP-led, or are we likely to see some other kind of bespoke, you know, arrangements made to try and make sure that this is distributed to those who need it?
We don't know as yet, I suppose, the detail on that, but I suppose sufficient to say that there's from the government task force through to the Department of Health group that developed policy and the implementation program at the HSE level, all of these groups are focused on delivering whatever vaccine becomes available in the most timely and effective manner. So another point to make, I suppose, is just that there are 10 vaccines currently in phase 3 clinical trials, and that would involve tens of thousands of people looking at safety and efficacy. And the EU have signed what are called advanced purchase agreements with four different pharmaceutical companies. One of those is the Pfizer group, but others would have different characteristics in terms of the number of doses needed and the storage and so on. So the groups that I've mentioned will be monitoring all of those developments.
Those are the candidates. They would be the AstraZeneca and the Eli Lilly and some of the other candidates that are that we have heard so much about.
That's right. There's Janssen Pharmaceuticals, Sanofi, GSK and AstraZeneca.
Okay. Do we know at this point, and I again appreciate that obviously there are still a lot of unknowns, do we know whether it would be free for people to avail of it if and when it's safe for them to actually get it?
What we do know, I suppose, is that the likelihood is that the vaccine will be offered to those most at risk initially. I mentioned some of the at-risk groups from people who are over 70, healthcare workers, and people who have particular medical conditions. So, in as you know, the seasonal flu vaccine is offered free of charge to these groups. So the detail on all of the implementation of this particular vaccine has to be worked out as yet.
And by the way, do we know, and again, I appreciate that Pfizer haven't shared the data privately for peer review, but when we talk about it being two doses, do we know, is it basically the same sort of shot twice? Are you basically getting the same vaccine in two equal parts, or is there a sense of sequence where you have to take one and then a little while later you get something that has a slightly different makeup? Because obviously if there were two different vaccines, then you'd need to have two perhaps different storage regimes for them.
Similar to many other vaccines, it's two doses of the same vaccine, and I suppose it's to achieve the maximum immune response, really, that one dose in some of these particular vaccines starts the immune response, and the booster dose then gets that immune response to the most effective level.
Okay. I'm conscious that I'm straying a little bit far from your native forte of the role in the HPSC, but perhaps with your expertise as a member of NEFID, you might be able to just address one or two other things as well. We talk a lot about these vaccines and we hear so much about when they might be ready for market, and we know that Pfizer has already manufactured 100 million doses of this candidate to try and make sure that it's rolled out as quickly as possible if and when it's approved. But there's different regulatory processes across the world, isn't there? And they talk about having, you know, emergency sanction for fast track distribution in the US. Is there something similar in the European Union or in Ireland, or where exactly do we stand on the process of actually approving these candidates and making sure then that they're safe by European standards before they get sent out into the world?
There is in the EU, there's the European Medicines Agency. So the assessment of these new vaccines and the regulation of them would be conducted through that European Medicines Agency on behalf of the member states. And they act as one single regulatory process for the European member states. But I suppose the their approach to the approval or regulation of these vaccines is based on the clinical trials that have taken place. And for example, in the Pfizer vaccine, the clinical trials so far have involved over 45,000 people from different age groups, different ethnic backgrounds. So what they're testing, I suppose, is the real world setting here and how safe and effective the vaccine is likely to be. So the regulation then is based on that.
Yeah, well, it's certainly encouraging to know that they're doing it on that sort of scale. Do we know, though, does Europe have a parallel process to what they have in the United States, where Pfizer have been told that they're on a kind of a fast track? Is there such a similar thing in Europe, or is it a case of still making sure that they have to meet all the usual standards?
They certainly make sure that any of the vaccine manufacturers have to meet the same standards as they would have in the United States or for any previous vaccines. I suppose in the case of the development of the COVID vaccine, there's been such a concentrated effort by researchers all over the world, and in relation to regulation, they will be aiming to assess these safety and efficacy of these vaccines in as timely a manner as possible so that there's no delay.
Okay. One final question before I let you go. One of the things that was widely reported on this week is the mutation of the virus that's been experienced in Denmark, because there seems to have been a slightly different transmission between humans and mink, and then something of a variant there. I don't know whether we sort of keep such a close eye on individual strains, but in your authority as the interim director of the HPSC, are you aware of there being any similar variant in Ireland, or is there any policy consideration being given to, you know, some sort of a curtailment measure like clamping down on mink farms in Ireland?
Well, this finding that you mentioned suggests that the mink-specific mutations have the potential to influence the virus sensitivity to protective antibodies. So the concern, I suppose, is that it may affect the effectiveness of these potential vaccines, or secondary, that people who have previously been infected with COVID, that if this one has slightly different mutations, then will it affect their level of immunity?
So it would basically bypass any herd immunity or any antibodies that you have, because it's a fundamentally different strain of COVID, so it's as if your body is reaching it for the first time again.
That's the concern at the moment, but that's being investigated currently by the Danish public health authorities and by the European Centre for Disease Control and Prevention. So we will have more information on that shortly, but suffice to say that we don't have any of that mutated version of the virus in Ireland. In Denmark, they found 12 human cases of this type of virus, and they were people who were working in close proximity to the mink farms in that area of northern Denmark. And it appears to have been very tightly controlled over there. We've also taken measures in this country. We have 3 mink farms in Ireland, and there have been measures taken here as well. Also, people who are returning from Denmark to Ireland now need to self-isolate for 14 days. In conjunction with our colleagues in the European Centre for Disease Control and Prevention and Danish colleagues, we're keeping a very close eye on this.
That's Dr. John Cuddihy, Interim Director of the Health Protection Surveillance Centre, the HPSC, which has been compiling the COVID-19 stats, and he's also a member of NEFIT, speaking to me a little bit earlier this morning.